This podcast series has been made possible through an exclusive sponsorship from SA's number one nano influencer platform, The Salt. Most brands have a communication line to their existing customers, but not a way to get them to have additional positive brand conversations. The Salt solves the problem by identifying brand fans and getting them to talk more about their positive brand experiences. The Salt have a database of over 140,000 registered brand fans and in-depth information on each to perfectly match your brand to the right influencers. Reach out to them now and see what they can do for you.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing. So we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey, Gordon, how's it going?
Really good. I'm looking forward to our discussion this morning and our guest this morning for one particular reason. You want to know why I'm really looking forward to this?
Yes, Gordon.
He's about the only oak in the industry who's still alive, who's older than me.
That's a hell of an intro. I mean, Gordon, I mean, for once we've got a guest in the studio and he's about to walk out after that intro.
Mike Leahy is the founder and MD of Media Manager and Media Inflation Watch. And I can tell you, I have known Mike since literally my very first day in advertising, because I joined McCann Erickson as the sort of junior assistant trainee media planner. And Mike, you were the media manager, I think, in those days. John Ransom was. So you were like the senior planner and I was the gopher. But literally, I've known Mike for over 40 years in media. So Mike, it's fantastic that you're able to join us in the studio today. We're really excited about that.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mike has been innovating in this kind of space for a long, long time. I mean, Mike, you remember the old days before you went online with Media Manager and Media Inflation Watch. We had a library full of books called SARAD.
SARADs and, of course, AMPS.
AMPS. All the data was, and we literally had whole offices of printed books, and you decided to innovate and move us into the space of online data information.
One had to. Things were moving faster and faster. People needed the information quicker and quicker, and it was the only means of delivery that made sense. Mm.
One of the things you kind of mentioned when we were chatting was who uses it. I mean, I was quite surprised because I was trying to figure out how and where they would fit into the life of an agency, a media agency. We get a lot of our TV data, you know, online through a Telma or an Ariana. So it all sits on the box. But you were saying that's not necessarily the space that you're playing these days.
Absolutely. If we look at our subscription numbers, about a third or so come from mainstream advertising agencies and media placing houses, the OMDs, the media shops and the like. Another one-third come from PR companies. Many of those are actually placing media themselves. And another third come from marketers and media owners. Media owners not necessarily wanting to know what they're doing, because, in fact, very often they don't, but what their competitors are doing, and that's why they use us. So it's an interesting mix, and The last year, for instance, the advertising industry, the paid-for space, as we all know, has taken a huge knock. But public relations is going gangbusters. It's doing very well. So as one sector declines, the other one takes up the slack, and vice versa. When things get back to normal, when money starts flowing, you'll find the advertising agency, media placing, the media business as we know it, Gordon, will suddenly start picking up. So it's an interesting balance.
Well, I'm loving the when part of it picks up again, as opposed to the more traditional view of if, yeah. please. But in the last couple of weeks, you've specifically launched released the latest tranche of inflation figures, and that has become a really important benchmark. And I know that a number of the global auditing companies are using that as a benchmark as well for their global report. So it really is a good indicator of where we sit. What are some of the highlights, or what are some of the inflation findings, you know, in the last release, which was what, quarter three of 20? There was a complication last year?
That's right. If you recall, quarter two, COVID-19 pandemic hit the print industry particularly very, very severely. There was no publishing in that period. If there was, there was very little distribution. So for the first three quarters of last year, we combined quarter one and quarter three and called that the average for the period. For radio, TV, outdoor, etc., we used the full three quarters. So that when we release quarter four, which will give us the full year's numbers, and that'll be in a few weeks' time, we'll have three quarters for print and four quarters for other media, except, of course, cinema, which has only got one quarter. And if it ever comes back on stream, who knows?
Yeah, I made the point to the doc earlier on in one of our discussions that I actually question whether we should be thinking of cinema as a medium anymore. We should think of it as some form of activation, to be quite honest, like going to a test match, but be that as may. So, I mean,
I think the medium will survive, make no mistake, but survive in a very different format. Be very much fewer houses, very much fewer screens. There'll be a special event. There'll be gigantic screens and all that, those Dolby special events and so on. You know, I look back. I mean, yes, I'm older than you, but I'm not quite as old as media. I look back, and the oldest known commercial communication was in Pompeii, and it was for a brothel, and it was for outdoor, and it's still there. You can go and look at it in Pompeii. I haven't yet, but I intend to. It's in my bucket list.
Well, I've been to Pompeii, and I can't say I particularly, maybe I missed that particular corner of Pompeii, and it's important, Doc, that you say it correctly, Pompeii. Don't call it Pompeii.
Well, no, maybe that's why you missed that particular corner. But I think it's sad about cinema, though, because, you know, Gordon and I were chatting on another show, and we were chatting on the nostalgic effect of the big screen of cinema. You know, the heydays of the big Peter Stuyvesant ads and the James Bond epics. And, you know, I guess in today's times, I guess those epics would have been Fast and Furious, and I guess the Harry Potter and all of those. And so it is sad, you know, with Stuart Kinnicoin Bank in business rescue at the moment. I don't know, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't have a view, but certainly, you know, you look back at those times and you remember them fondly of that magic of cinema and its commercial properties. And certainly, you know, as a marketing guy, Gordon, you know, we use cinema earlier on in my career a lot more than at the end. You know, at the end it became, as you say, almost a last buy out of the media mix.
Well, if one looks at cinema globally, as an advertising medium, it doesn't feature in the States at all. Mm. It's not allowed to carry commercials. So it's relatively few, as far as I'm aware, countries in the world ever carried commercials of the type we know in this country. Okay. Again, going back, I mean, when TV launched, everyone thought that radio would die, but it didn't. It changed. Mm. When radio launched, everyone thought the print would die. And that's 100 years ago in South Africa, the first radio stations. But it didn't die. It just changed. Yeah. And every new medium adds to the communications mix that we've got. Mm. I mean, when online became even half important, all of those propeller heads thought every medium was going to die. Mm. And of course, it hasn't, and it won't, but it will change. Mm. And in the same way, a cinema will change, and it's probably long overdue, but it will still exist because no medium that's ever been invented by humankind has ever disappeared. Mm. It's just changed.
Yeah. Certainly not the one in Pompeii, anyway.
Well, I'm told we've still got brothels, but you might know better than I.
Yeah, no, look, you don't even have to find a brothel these days. You just take a drive after hours through Saint, and I can assure you there's plenty of activity. It's rather sad, so it doesn't even have to go indoors anymore. But
and they're all underneath the supermarkets.
Underneath the arches, we dream. No, that's a difference. That's World War II. Sorry, I'm reminiscing. Speaking of reminiscing, I mean, just to come back to cinema, you're right. You know, of course, back in those days without television, all we had was Bioscope.
Yeah.
So it was the big place to launch those big commercials. And then once we had the launch of television, Doc, you won't remember this, but we had the staggering equation where if you were the brand leader, you got 8 spots on television. Then there was a Barney.
And 4 had to be Afrikaans and 4 had to be English.
In English, correct.
And you had to split them into the 3 seasons of the year.
So not four, all of these, three. Plus, and then depending on your market share and your share of voice, you could Barney over an additional 4 spots,
yep,
which could take you up to a total of 12. And then there was a mysterious thing which the SABC called Factor X, and trust me, Mark will tell you this is true. You have to sit there. So if you were Ford and Toyota had 15 spots and you had only got 13, you had to then write a report on why you didn't get the extra 2. And then we eventually discovered it was called Factor X,
yeah,
which 20 years later we discovered was at the discretion of the SABC. Mm. And I think at the discretion of Jacob Zuma. it's the same principle. Some things haven't changed in that regard. But, Mike, let's come back to Media Inflation Watch because a couple of big developments here. I mean, the most noteworthy stuff. And year on year, it's not so much the quarter on quarter, especially last year because it's hard to get it fixed. But year on year, if I look at radio, there's a flattening out. It's almost at zero, maybe kind of 0.5%. And television also is flattening out. But just explain to us how you go about calculating and reporting inflation. So I know you're looking at basically at audience and rate card. It's a bit of a mix. It's not as simple as it might sound.
No, it's far from simple. What happened is about 20-odd years ago, I arrived late at a media director circle meeting. And all of the portfolios had been handed out. And there's one portfolio left called Media Inflation. And they said, OK, Mike, you've picked the short straw. So I was given that. And I was given some spreadsheets on Lotus 1-2-3, of course, because that was dominant in those days, of various calculations. And I realized that there was something missing. What was missing was a way of comparing media over a point, over a period of time that was consistent. And secondly, weighting the media so that as a medium's changes through the years, that was taken into account. So what I did is I had a standard advertising package, standard units of space for each medium. And for print, for instance, it was quite simple. Then it was a column centimeter, black and white, for newspapers because colour had a funny calculation, but in subsequent years it's become full page, full colour, or its equivalent in newspapers. For radio, what I did is I took one spot an hour from 6 o'clock in the morning to 2100 in the evening. So it didn't matter if the stations changed their channels. It didn't matter if one station had a different calculation, a different channel makeup to another station. So long as they were broadcasting, I had them. And similarly with the TV, I took a 20-spot package at the same points in time every single month. So those points in time would be, on a Saturday, for instance, 1500 to capture the sport as it was then, 2000 peak time, 2300 shoulder time. For Sunday, it was 2000 and 2100, 20 spots through the week. And it was always the last week of the month, both for radio and for TV, because that was the biggest advertising month, biggest advertising week, rather. So that if the stations up their rates, you might recall the SABC had a Monday, Tuesday was cheaper at that stage than Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It didn't matter. I had them, and there was a methodology to take it forward. The second thing I looked at was, how do you weight, for instance, SABC One against the Diamond Fields advertiser? And particularly through the years, because their revenues are going to change, their performances are going to change. So what I did is I took the revenue numbers ex Nielsen's. So on the basis that if you were spending 10 million rand in SABC One last year, and the rates went up 10%, you're now paying 10% more. If your performance has gone down 10%, you're getting 10% less. And your cost per thousand, roughly speaking, would go up about 18%, thereabouts. So apply that to the whole industry. So the whole of the SABC's one revenue, which is currently billions, and they've got the numbers. And that's how I put it together. So it's now about 86, 87% of the spend in the country weighted with all mainstream media. We don't have to monitor every single magazine, for instance. Firstly, it's not in ABC. We use the ABC numbers. Secondly, you're not going to get the AdX numbers. But they're sufficient there to get the trend of the industry and certainly the important mediums that most advertisers are spending money in.
I can see the doc's eyes lighting up with excitement at all these numbers.
He's a closet number man. You know, he'll tell you he's a strategic thinker and he's agile, but he's a closet numbers man.
This is exactly when I would sit to the media house, Gordon, and say, simplify this to exactly what I need to know. And if I need anything more, I'll ask you specifically. But don't start off with 100 numbers, because by the time, you know, half an hour into the meeting, I've lost it. So start off with a few that I need and then tell me why I need them. So absolutely. But yeah, well done on that. Well,
at the end of the day, you can just get one figure.
Yeah.
How much your rate has gone up,
yeah,
how much your performance has gone down,
yeah,
and what the... Well, I had to call it the MIW index. And here is a bit of a problem, because not for all media and not for all periods can you calculate a cost per thousand. For instance, if TAMS or RAMS makes a methodology change, you can't compare one period to another. Mm. So we draw a line across that and say, okay, you can't compare the listenership or the viewership. The only thing that you can compare is the rate. So in that instance, we say the cost per thousand change is the rate increase. Mm. It's one of the quirks in the data.
This is why he's the responsible part of the media business. I'm recently converted to what the doc tells me is called a two-handed regression. If you don't like the way the numbers look, you just squeeze them and put them together. And I can compare, I can assure you, I can compare anything with anything at all if I'm in the mood. But nevertheless, okay, so let's bring it back on track. The sector that is most under scrutiny right now, not least of all because they've just released some ABC figures, which we'll talk about, is the print sector. And looking at the inflation figures, I mean, year on year, the quarter three figure you released, dailies up 33%, 45% for weeklies, magazines up 18%. It poses the question, you know, with that kind of spiraling, and that's linked to you at the point you raised, so the circulation declines, even if the rate card were to remain the same, you know, there's going to be an increase in inflation. How sustainable is that sector?
I think the advertiser will determine that. I wouldn't like to prognosticate, that's the term, as to which ones are going to die and which ones are going to live. But if you said, just look at a mainstream publication like Fair Lady. When I was a little boy in media, when we were both little boys in media, there were 26 issues a year. Mm. In 2002, it went to 12 issues a year, monthly. Right now, 6 issues a year. Back 20-odd years ago, it was 170-odd thousand circulation. These days, it's 30,000-odd circulation. I stand to be out a bit on the circulation here. But certainly we're looking at huge decrease. So if you look at the issues it pushed out into the marketplace for the average advertiser, the number of pages it could carry, the early two, the early part of this this century, if you can call it that, there were 26 issues a year. It could carry very many more pages. These days it can't. It's just a limitation, and that will carry through. If you look at the Diamond Fields Advertiser, the daily, I mean, I think it's 1878 it was launched. It's over 100 years old. It's just gone weekly from maybe 100 years of Monday to Friday. They say they're going to recommence daily publishing when COVID-19 pandemic has passed. But will it? Somehow I doubt it, because back in the day, they had a printing press. These days, they truck in the copies, all the copies from Johannesburg, push up the price of diesel. All of a sudden, it gets more expensive. It's not going. I wish it will happen, but I doubt it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the cost of distribution is horrendous. But I mean, I guess that, Doc, that's all FMCG. I mean, distribution has got to be a key factor.
Yeah, you know, but I guess it starts with the point you guys were making earlier in terms of printed books. You know, I mean, when you were talking, and I wasn't saying, I was just listening, you know, I immediately conjured up Encyclopedia Britannica World Book when I grew up at school. You know, that was the source of reference. It was printed. And I guess now the adage is the moment it's printed, it's outdated. So if you look at newspapers and look at stuff that I need to see now, and I look at, you know, just from a pure advertising marketing point of view, where we used a lot of those prints, Diamondfield Advertiser just been one of those to look at the Kimberley area, Foxblatt in Bloom. I'm just looking at that region now for a second. It was mostly around our retail ads that had a very short shelf life, knowing that the newspaper was going to be in and out. But we know that people could just go online. They could go on the app and find that piece of information a lot quicker. Forget the fact that it had to be distributed. That before they even got the thing, before it dropped, you know, you've got a limited time span. And so we used it for retail, which is, you know, as I say, was done from a dwell time, you know, so people could sit down, dwell, look at the piece of paper, absorb the deal. But these days, you know, as people are more and more used to buying online and interacting, and we've spoken at some length, Gordon, about, and not just COVID, but I mean, how that's accelerated the whole digital adoption. Mm. I don't know about the future of newspapers for near quick time data, because yeah, I can just go online. It's there and it changes. And if I look at stock prices, share prices, financial indicators, that stuff, the moment you print it, it's outdated.
That's the challenge. I mean, and it's interesting to look at that dynamic. So, you know, if we look at perhaps the one example in the last couple of months of success, and we featured Daily Maverick 168 here, I mean, the distribution formula they've come up with is brilliant. Yeah. They initially were projecting 25,000 copies. They're up to 33,000 now, which is very encouraging. And give it some context. Let's take The Star, which was the blockbuster title. Star has got 22,000 circulation, but a paid-for component of that 14,000. So it is literally, you know, they, as you said, it's smaller than the Sandton Chronicle. I mean, there are papers that have become obsolete. And now you talked earlier about, you know, when television arrived, you know, radio reinvented itself, and radio is busy reinventing itself now through podcasting and all that kind of stuff.
Hashtag no filter. That's how this podcast is delivering real down-to-earth stories told by real people. For an influencer campaign that takes brand conversation to everyday real-life situations, go check out thesalt.co.za. They are the undisputed experts in real influencer marketing.
Are you seeing any evidence of newspapers kind of reinventing themselves? I mean, beyond the obvious. And you know, one of the advantages, and I don't want to keep, you know, punting Daily Maverick, but is you can read the thing for 3 or 4 days. You can literally read it cover to cover. Yeah. One, because it's readable, and two, the editorial to advertising ratio is not what you're finding in some of the other papers. I mean, 5 pages of retail before I get to the first article in a major Sunday paper. That's insane. Yeah.
Well, 168, I think, is a brilliant concept. It's just a pity that it's unable to carry too much retail advertising because of the pick and pay link.
Yeah.
So that severely limits the revenue that they're able to to pull into the newspaper, unfortunately. It is a very nice read, and from a business point of view, it's very few extra people they have to add because it's a one-stop distribution. They don't have fleets of trucks and things floating around. Presumably, they don't have a circulation manager. And all the editorial staff are already employed elsewhere in the business, so it makes a huge amount of sense. Make no mistake, the management of the average mainstream newspaper in this country is no fool. They've known about this for a long time. They've known what's happening overseas. What has happened is that COVID-19 has just condensed the obvious, and it's accelerated that revolution into 1 year. They've had no time to adapt to it. If one looks at the average newspaper, they're all online in any event. If one looks at the brand, the Star, look at the Sunday Times, look at them as a brand, and you look at the various touch points, and they've got all the touch points there. What they've not been able to do yet, and maybe it's too late for some of them, is convert the print touch point to the online and the other touch points. Hopefully all those brands will continue. Whether or not there'll be printed touch points, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some confusion. Also, some of the early efforts, although successful, like a Times Live, you had the conflict. It's the brand is Sunday Times, but the online component is Times Live. So there needs to be a streamlining of the branded entity per se, so I know what I'm getting myself into. But the
other point here, Gordon, is that and it's an adage within the newspaper industry, they're swapping print rands for online cents.
Mm.
And you look at a big operation like Arena, and they've got a, well, maybe not now, but certainly a whole building full of people doing goodness knows what. Economies are very, very different. Online businesses are very different. So they're having to make a very painful transition. Mm. And it's that revolution has just accelerated that. Those big public companies need big revenues. And I'm not totally sure the online models are going to deliver the kind of revenues that could sustain those big companies.
Yeah, some of those freemium things are tempting. So I'm kind of tormented with guilt because I read The Guardian, you know, kind of religiously online, and they equally faithfully sort of invite me every day to pay for it. And just for the moment, I can't. It's just not an option. But were I to get to the point where I could, I would happily pay for a subscription to the online Guardian because the quality of the writing is outstanding. Same with The Spectator. So
absolutely.
I guess, you know, it's like any product, Doc. If the quality is there, one has to, you know, somebody will purchase it. So you've got to kind of invest in the quality first before you try and sell the quality outcome.
And also the options. In other words, what else is available? You know what I mean? So in other words, if you look at something, and let's take News24 as an example online, they've got a subscription model as well, which I haven't subscribed to. You know what I mean? Because my logic is I can get that elsewhere. I don't have to go to News24 to read Global, but a South African news essentially. So I guess that's always the challenge, you know, Gordon, in any market, in any marketing, is who's your opposition. Mike, you spoke earlier about understanding what is out there and getting value for money. Also, you know, if you look at some of the marketer of the year who we've had on, a lot of the theme there, and it's such an obvious theme, is what does the customer want? You know what I mean? What does the customer want? What is the convenience? People are not going to do something that is harder for them and more expensive unless they can see that extra value. And if you can't make it tangible, they are going to take the path of least resistance for them at that point in time. Mark, you wanted to say?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at the magazine market, that's exactly what's happening. You look at some of the European productions. My wife gets some of them. Yeah. They are beautifully produced.
Yeah.
Different stock and the art direction superb. Really, really good reads. And there are some magazines making that kind of noise in this country. Ideas comes to mind. Tarina Turon, and she just launched a journal. Fairly small numbers, but they are superb productions. Well worth the premium cover price. And that's really got to be the future of print, because Why bother paying for something you can get elsewhere? It's what you can't get elsewhere. It's the package that it's delivered in. The Maverick 168, yes, it's a newspaper. It's printed like a newspaper, but it could be a magazine. Mm. It looks very similar in many respects to The Economist. Mm. And The Economist internationally, the same as the Financial Times, is doing superbly well. Why? It all comes down to content. People are prepared to pay for something that's unique and that's worthwhile. I mean, try and read The Economist. It's hell to read, but if you can get into it, it's fantastic.
Outstanding. Yep, I agree with you. Just a couple of points there, Mike, before we wrap up. What's the best way for people to interface with you? Just on the Media Manager website, is there an access point there, or are you? Well, I know part of your team is on social media.
It's cobbler's children's shoes, really. We ought to be doing a lot more, but we're too busy doing what we're doing. They can send me an email, mikel@mediamanager.co.za. Our website, yes, there's quite a lot of information there, www.mediamanager.co.za.
Yeah, and just to come up then, for the wrap-up, I mean, I think the point you've raised there is about economies of scale. I mean, once you get beyond, and I think you mentioned earlier, was it a Swedish report? There was a kind of an optimal cutoff point beyond which you can't kind of recover. The economies of scale aren't there. What was that comment, which I thought was really interesting?
Well, it was the Swedish Press Commission, I think, of about 19. It was in the 1960s, and I remember Noel Coburn describing why the Rand Daily Mail failed, because what happened is that they got to beneath the threshold of supplying at least 55% distribution penetration of any particular market. And once it gets beneath that threshold, it then becomes less relevant to advertisers, particularly retail, which is such an important component of newspapers. It's why the Sandton Chronicle and the Randburg Sun, etc., carry so much retail advertising, because they penetrate that market. And one's got to ask the question, how many of our daily newspapers are going to cope on that kind of
Well, that's scenario. The challenge, and I think you've mentioned one of the two of the publishers. I think we should revisit that, Doc, because, I mean, for me, it's just overtraded. We've got, in 1975, we had 19 weeklies. Now we've got 26. In the 70s, you had 100% or 80% of ad spend going on TV kind of thing, and on print, and 20% on TV. Now it's swung the other way around. So just not viable. There must be some sort of consolidation. But I think that's for another topic. So, Mike?
I just wanted to ask Gordon, Mike, just Hayes-Grenwert and you, how are they doing? I mean, they seem to be, we've spoken, Gordon, last year about magazines and we saw Associated Press but they seem to chug along and do stuff. I mean, how are their numbers?
They're holding up surprisingly well. I mean, I look at them each quarter and I say, there's got to be a fall sooner or later. But because it's the kind of content you can get on Facebook and the like.
Yeah.
But it has a franchise, and that is holding up remarkably well, surprisingly.
It is. It's one of those. We were chatting earlier about the nostalgic effect, certainly for me, of cinema, but also of magazines of yesteryear. I remember a holiday, driving in the back of a car when you're a kid, reading a magazine. And certainly I remember, Hayes-Grenwert, I think it was before you, wasn't it? It was always Hayes-Grenwert before they made the English version. I mean, as a kid, I always saw this magazine and still today.
But having said that, I mean, Hayes-Grenwert, you, and there's a third leg of that a triangle called Drum.
Yes,
Drum is now dead. It's now only online.
Is that a fact? Because I was actually going to ask that question. Because that is interesting. I mean, again, I don't know. Has it got a younger readership? Is that part of the logic? You and maybe Hayes-Grenwert, is it a female skew, older readership that people would prefer to read a magazine?
Always, cover to cover. It always had a female bias.
Yeah.
And older, I think these days would be even more exaggerated. They tried desperately and very innovatively at the time to capture young people because you had the sort of young you or whatever kids kind of sector in it. But, you have to challenge, young people to re-engage with something with which they have become unfamiliar. It's not their kind of natural tendency. And I know that because, unlike, we got another grandpa here. He's got three. I'm looking forward to getting my new scrum half this next few days somewhere. Number nine, yeah.
Oh, really?
So, but it's interesting when you watch little people and you read a book with them, they don't turn pages as you and I would. They kind of,
Scroll them across
like a screen, and they touch and they treat it like a screen. That's the instinctive response. But I think Hastings in particular for me has got one vertical component, which is we sometimes forget in this country. It's Afrikaans.
Mm. Mm.
You were saying 50% penetration, threshold in a defined target market. Afrikaans speakers are a huge chunk of this country. So anything which is providing a communication in Afrikaans is probably got a head start in terms of viability, but
there's another factor there. Strange it may seem that school teachers, Afrikaans school teachers, make Haskinet prescribed reading for English speakers to learn Afrikaans.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's got a higher proportion of English speakers of that magazine. Okay. Look, maybe it's changed now. I haven't looked at the figures, but certainly when my kids were young, that's what they had to do.
Very interesting.
Well,
for
me, I'm just sad that none of you have mentioned what I thought was the high point of publishing in South Africa from a magazine perspective, which was Scope magazine. And I tell you, I was so disappointed the first time I did actually catch a glimpse of a young lady that there were, in fact, no stars at all in the naughty bits. I found that somewhat disappointing, to be quite honest with you. But on that note, Doc, I'm going to leave you to wrap up. Just thanks to all the listeners. Mike, thanks. It's really good to have you in. And I think somewhere along the line, what I'd like to do with you and some of our colleagues of yesteryear is have more of a fireside chat where we can talk about those times. So, Doc, and listeners, thanks. I'm going to leave it to the doctor.
Right? Yeah, thanks, Gordon. Thanks, Mike. Thanks very much for your time and your insights. And again, we always urge our listeners to be part of the conversation. Mike gave gave you his email address a bit earlier, so please be part of the conversation, find out. And just as an aside, Gordon, you talk about little kids and we've got a little godson. He's and he grew up with an iPad. He's seven now, so he's not a little chap anymore. But I mean, the way he plays his computer games, you see how irritated he gets when there's an ad in the way. I mean, he pushes to skip the ad, and so that behavior. And I'm saying, as a marketing guy, it's tough to get through that because he wants to play sharks and he hasn't got time to watch other ads. The second point,
on that point, my five-year-old grandson has got his own YouTube channel. Where he puts on his fishing videos.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's amazing. But I mean, that's
it himself
at five. And I think that's the point. It just moves. And unless, I guess to marketers out there and media people and everyone in the industry, if you're not staying on the curve, Gordon, we've made this is not a new point and this shouldn't be a surprise. If you're not staying up, you're falling behind. And it's pretty simple. And then just the last point I wanted to make, in the odd occasion that I go to a shopping center these days, I try to avoid them. The other day, the true story, I was in one of the centers and I went to one of these, these digital things with a map that tells you where you got to go. Center I wasn't familiar with. And I tried to swipe. I thought it was like a giant iPad, but it was a static digital. And I actually found myself getting irritated. And I guess, you get so used to this interactive, you're on your phone, you're on your thing. I couldn't understand why this thing wouldn't move. So I was kind of hoping that no one had seen me and there wasn't a secret camera. But
somebody's got you on camera. But anyway. You've raised a good point for us to end on. The little lighty wants to do shark, so we'll sing it out. Come on. Baby shark.
I'll leave you to do the singing.
Baby shark.
I'm keeping quiet.
What kind of a grandpa are you that you don't do baby shark? Ciao for now, everyone.
Ciao, listeners. See you next time. Cheers.
Ciao.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook. Like us. Follow us. Subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mateus. I'm very active and very keen
to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
This podcast series has been made possible by The Salt, the influencer company that turns influence into affluence. In the same way that information is presented in this podcast in a relatable and authentic way, The Salt gets your customers to tell their real brand stories to their community. Go to thesalt.co.za to learn more about how The Salt can help you grow your business.